The opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the management of KUCI or the UC Board of Regents. For more information about this show, go to kuci.org.
This is KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine.
Welcome to In the Garden, hosted by University of California Master Gardeners. I'm Mark Fearley, your Master Gardener host for today. I'm excited to bring you a new show on KUCI called In the Garden. It's a weekly one-half-hour show devoted to what's going on and what to do in Orange County home gardens. Each week, one of your University of California Master Gardeners Gardener hosts will feature a current gardening subject, project, or interview with a local gardening expert. For example, we'll feature a monthly show on what to do in the garden for that month, a garden project of the month, a what's bugging you segment to focus on solving gardening problems, and other fun and informative gardening topics. Now, I want you to write down a couple of places to look on your computer. One is the Master Gardener website, and it is www.uccemg.com. And for you that have a gardening problem, contact the hotline via email. The address is hotline@uccemg.com, and get some good advice to grow on and ask us. Now, for the moment, let's get on with our show. As you know, we live in one of the best climates in the world, and one in which we can enjoy and cultivate edibles and decorative plants year-round. No cold, no snow-covered gardens for us, but that also means that much of the garden literature out there doesn't apply to us, as it often assumes frost and freezing weather for a good chunk of the year. So our show will specifically focus on what is the right thing to do at the right time of year in our Orange County gardens. So who are these University of California Master Gardeners who are hosting the show? There are three of us, actually, who will take turns hosting the show. Me, Tina Spindler, and Katrina Kirkaby. We are all University of California Master Gardeners. That means we are volunteers who have a passion for gardening. But more importantly, we have been trained by the University of California Cooperative Extension in science-based gardening, horticulture, pest control, and water management. We are a public outreach arm of the University of California, and our mission is to bring the information to the public. We do this in a variety of ways, by volunteering at public gardens like the Farm and Food Lab at the Great Park in Irvine, Centennial Farm at the Fairgrounds, volunteering at local gardening events like the South Coast Plaza Garden Show, as well as public speaking at numerous venues, and assisting with school and community gardens throughout the county. And now we have the opportunity to do this awesome radio show. We hope you will join us weekly for a half hour of fun in the garden. Now, again, why are we going to do this? Well, think about this. In Southern California, while we have an ideal climate, we have a multiple of microclimates, where in certain areas, things will grow better than others. For example, the foggy coast promotes nicer cool season plants. Inland, warm season, and other times. But we will be talking in coming weeks about vegetable gardening, fruit trees, gardening in a drought, native plants, raised beds, pest control, composting, mulch, and one of my all-time favorites, tomatoes. Seems like we have problems in all those areas from time to time. We will be having a guest today, fortunately, and his name is Daniel Hebert. And Daniel is a certified square foot garden teacher and founder of the Backyard Harvest organization. Now, when we go from here, what we're really going to be talking about is raised beds using square foot gardening techniques. My questions for Daniel will be as follows. And Daniel, welcome to our show.
Thank you, Mark. I really appreciate you having me on.
Good. Daniel, many people in Southern California have raised beds.
Yes.
What is the advantage of using square foot gardening techniques over what they're already using?
The square foot gardening techniques, I think, overcome a lot of the problems that I hear people have when they have raised beds. I think one of the biggest problems that people have with traditional raised beds is, even though they are raising that up a little bit, they're still using a lot of the native soil, or they are using the majority of the native soil and amending that. And so they still have a lot of the problems that you have with...
What kind of problems?
Well, I think one of the problems with using native soils is the soil that we have in large areas of Southern California is not very rich. It doesn't have a lot of organic components. And I think the biggest problem that most gardeners complain about is the fact that they have weeds by the end of the growing season.
What is your solution?
With the square foot gardening techniques, we use a custom soil blend that we make ourselves. And one of the biggest advantages is that it has no weed seeds, so that completely eliminates a lot of that. And because of the fact that it doesn't use any of the native soil, things like the soil getting compressed and hard and crumbly, it just doesn't happen using the custom soil blend that we use.
Well, there are many custom soil blends out there. You go into a home improvement center and they've got all kinds from different venues that they promote. But what makes this special blend so much better? And what is included in your blend?
Yeah, the custom soil blend that we use with the square foot gardening method is something that we call Mel's Mix. Now, it's called Mel's Mix because it's named after the inventor of square foot gardening, Mel Bartholomew. And he was a civil engineer and an efficiency expert by trade. And when he retired, he invented the square foot gardening method. And I think, being the engineer that he was, he did a lot of research in what was currently available and what were the ideal growing medium that vegetable plants really need to grow strong and healthy.
Is Mel a botanist?
I think not by education, other than doing a lot of research and asking questions about why traditional methods had the problems that they did and why people did things the way that they historically have done them.
Typically, I hear that our garden soil has about 4 to 6% nutrient value. And I assume that when you tell me about your ideal Mel's mix, you're going to give me some information on that. But let's look along the line of how was this developed and what's in it?
Well, the Mel's mix is really it's composed of three types of ingredients. The first ingredient is peat moss. And the role that the peat moss serves is it holds a tremendous amount of water, but it also serves like a sponge where it will repel the extra water. If you think about using a sponge, you dip it in a bucket of water and then you thoroughly soak it and you pick it up, it's going to easily drain off all of the excess water. And once it stops draining, the sponge itself will hold a lot of moisture, but not continue to run off.
That seems kind of like it both holds and repels water. Is that what you're getting at?
Absolutely. Because the roots of a plant, they don't want to be drowned in water. And so by holding the water as well as repelling the water, it keeps an ideal amount of water in the soil. So there's always plenty of water for the plant, but not an excess where it's going to drown the roots.
Well, if I can ask you something about this ingredient, peat moss, isn't that ecologically in danger?
Not really. Most of the peat moss that we get here in the United States actually comes from Canada. And Canada has thousands of square miles covered in peat bogs. And most estimates are that there's enough peat moss to last hundreds of years with the amount that we typically use in gardening. Now, one of the advantages of the square foot gardening method is when we add the peat moss, we only add it the very first time that we create our Mel's mix.
My goodness.
The other advantage of using raised beds and the square foot gardening method is the square foot gardening method uses a very intensive way of planting. So compared to traditional row gardening, you can get 100% of the harvest in only 20% of the space. So when you're comparing it to what you would traditionally do with row gardens, you're actually using a very small amount of peat moss. Now, if that is still a concern, there's a substitute that we can use, a 50-50 blend. Instead of using 100% peat moss for that one third of the mix, we can use 50% peat moss and 50% coconut coir. And coconut coir is the husks of a coconut, and that's completely sustainable.
Where do you get that?
You can buy both of those ingredients at most of the major gardening centers. Most of the big box retailers have those. And you can always order it online. And then the blocks of peat moss, those come compressed. So before you use any of the ingredients, you want to fluff up the peat moss. Just break it up with your fingers. And then the coconut coir typically comes in a highly compressed block. And that you just want to go ahead and soak in water. And that will absorb the water, and then again, you'll be able to break that up so you can measure it into your mix.
Well, Daniel, you mentioned that peat moss is one third. What else is included?
The second ingredient is something called coarse vermiculite. And vermiculite is a mined product. It's mined mica, and then the mica is heated until it pops like popcorn. So it creates all of these nooks and crannies similar to an English muffin, and like an English muffin with holds the butter in all the nooks and crannies, the vermiculite will also hold water in the nooks and crannies. The other thing it will do is hold a lot of air in that, and it keeps the soil light and friable. So it's going to be easily worked, And the roots are going to be able to penetrate through that soil and move around and grow very, very easily.
Interesting. It kind of makes me think of, I assume mica is a mineral. Is that correct?
Yes, it is. It's mined.
And what that means, I remember when I was a kid, my mother always used to insist that I have both vitamins and minerals. Do other garden soils have minerals?
They have minerals, but it's not necessarily in a form that the plant can easily utilize.
Interesting. So if I understand you correctly, the vermiculite, as you call it, is something that gives pore space. Would that be a good term to use?
Yes, absolutely.
And does it also help support your product?
Yeah.
Your garden vegetables?
Yes, absolutely. Both the peat moss and the vermiculite are going to create a bulk to the soil and create a certain amount of volume to that.
Now, we've talked about water retention and expelling of water. We've talked about minerals and a pore space product called vermiculite. What about the rest of the ingredients?
Yeah, the rest of the mix. So the peat moss and the vermiculite doesn't have a lot of nutrients and won't have the amount of nutrients that your plants are going to need to grow. So where the nutrients come from in Mel's mix is by using 1/3 blended compost.
Blended compost? What does that mean?
When you look at the ingredients on most of the composts that you can buy in a bag, the majority of them come from a single source. So you may have a sawmill that will take their sawdust and compost that and then bag that up and sell that essentially waste product as a compost, a bagged compost. Or it might be a dairy farm that's using cow manure or a chicken farm with chicken manure. And there's nothing wrong with any of those composts. They're all great compost sources. However, because they come from a single ingredient, they have a very narrow nutrient spectrum. So what we mean by blended compost is you want to buy a bag of sawdust-based, various manure-based composts, maybe compost that comes from worm composting or a mushroom farm. And then you want to blend those together because it's going to give you the broad nutrient spectrum that the variety of plants we're going to want to grow in our garden are going to need to be healthy.
Excellent. So if 1/3 now is blended compost, how many blends should we have?
The ideal is about 4 to 5, 3 to 5 different types of compost to get blended together.
To get a variety of nutrients? Is that what you're trying to get across?
Absolutely. And that's really what we're looking for, is that variety of nutrients, that broad spectrum. And that will support the various types of crops that we're going to want to grow in our raised beds.
Well, if I understand correctly then, and tell me if I'm wrong, be sure. If our soil has about 5 to 6% nutrients, and now we have a new soil that, if the compost is nutrient rich, we've got a soil that has about 33% of nutrients.
Yeah, absolutely. One third of the soil blend comes from this blended compost, which has the broad spectrum of nutrients. And compost is really an ideal medium to grow our crops in, because it has all of those nutrients in a form that's easily accessible and easily taken up by the plants.
Well, that is very interesting. I've never thought of it that way. It sounds almost like what you might call an ideal soil. But what are the results of that, having all that nutrients available?
Strong, healthy plants. And all of the nutrients that are in the soil eventually get taken up by the plants, which eventually get consumed by us.
Does that mean we get bigger and better tasting crops?
Absolutely.
I like that. I might give that a try. But from what I've read and understand and some of the research, if we just use regular garden soil and have to amend it once or twice a year with compost, takes about 7 years to get an ideal soil. Sounds like what you're telling me and our listeners is that why not start off with an ideal soil rather than waiting 7 years?
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the advantages of building your Mel's Mix, is because the very first year you're going to have everything you need to have an ideal garden.
And when we take that, how deep should the raised bed be that you make? And maybe tell me a little bit about size and depth.
Yeah. A typical size of a raised bed using the square foot gardening technique is 4 feet by 4 feet, or 16 square feet. Now, the reason why we recommend you don't go any wider than 4 feet is because both the tallest man and the shortest woman will be able to reach into the box about 2 feet comfortably without ever having to stand on the soil. And one of the things we never want to do is stand inside the box, because that compresses the soil. And that's one of the reasons why traditional row crops, we have to rototill at the beginning of each season.
That sounds like hard work to me.
Exactly. And I think one of the things that's great about the square foot gardening techniques is that it takes as much of that hard work away as possible, so you can really focus on the fun parts of gardening, which is planting and nurturing your plants, and then ultimately harvesting all that great produce.
How deep should they be?
Surprisingly, because of the fact that we use this great soil blend and it has so much nutrients, we only need a 6-inch depth to our raised bed.
Six inches. That doesn't sound right to me. I mean, typically, raised beds that I've seen are 12 to 24 inches deep, because as some people tell me when I ask them why they have them so deep, is they like to sit on them to do their gardening.
Right. If you want to make them that high, that's fine. But what I would recommend is 6 inches below the top of that is you put a bottom, so that you don't actually have to fill that entire 18 to 24 inches with the Mel's Mix. That's going to increase your costs, and it really doesn't need that, because again, the soil blend that we're using is so nutrient rich that we only need 6 inches in order to grow our crops.
Very interesting concept and a technique that can, sounds like it saves money, can grow great crops.
Absolutely.
Has some good specifics, but you call this square foot gardening techniques. Where's the square feet come in?
I think the other thing that sort of defines the square foot gardening method is the fact that on top of our raised bed, we're going to build a grid that divides the raised bed into 1-foot by 1-foot squares. And that not only makes the garden really look unique, it adds kind of a very cool look to the top of it, but then that square foot grid serves as our planting guide.
My goodness. It sounds like they're crisscrossing grids in 1-foot size.
Absolutely. And that's really going to ensure that we maximize the amount of produce that we can grow inside each square foot.
You know, Daniel, that's one of the big things I get from gardeners that are having problems with their garden. They either plant it too close and their crops are smaller, less. I'm going to consider doing that. And I would suggest, if you can figure out what to put in one square foot, can you put a lot of things in there?
Absolutely. One of the things that we always say is, if it doesn't have a grid, it's not a square foot garden. And depending on the size of the overall plant and the spacing it says on the seed packet, we are either going to put 1, 4, 9, or 16 plants in each square foot.
16? What can you put 16 of in a square foot?
You could put 16 onions, you could put 16 carrots, you could put 16 chive plants. So,
are you kidding me?
16 per square foot is going to give you a 3-inch spacing. So any plant that you look at, either on the plant tag as a transplant or on the seed packet that tells you to thin to 3 inches, that will allow you to plant 16 per square.
Can you grow tomatoes?
Absolutely.
How about watermelons?
Absolutely.
How do you do that?
Well, in a square foot garden, we will put a vertical trellis on the north side on the box, and then all of our vining crops and our tomatoes, we're going to weave into the trellis, so we're going to grow up instead of out.
Interesting. And where do we normally locate these square foot gardens, these 6-inch deep square foot gardens? Sounds kind of interesting, rather than the typical older raised bed system.
Yeah, I think one of the advantages of square foot gardening and the method that we use is that these boxes can go anywhere that you get 6 to 8 hours of sunlight. So you don't just have to consider your yard. We've put them on patios, on balconies, on decks, on driveways, on walkways.
My goodness. Is that what your company does?
Absolutely. We design and build raised beds according to the square foot gardening method. And we will help people figure out where they can place one so they can really maximize whatever space that they have available.
And what area do you service?
We service all of Orange County.
My goodness. Well, Daniel, you have been an interesting guest and given a lot of great information. I learned a lot of things today. And welcome. Thank you so much for being on our show. And I know our listeners will appreciate. Do you have a website or an address where anybody interested or has questions can contact you or whatever?
Yeah, absolutely. If anybody is interested to find out more about the square foot gardening method or backyard harvest, you can go to the website, which is www.backyardharvest.com. And another place that you can go is the Square Foot Gardening Foundation website, which is squarefootgardening.org.
Very good. Thank you again. For our Orange County listeners, we hope you will find topics like this enlightening, so please keep in tune each week. You can always find our time on the KUCI.org website. Again, thank you. We look forward to talking with you in the future, and happy gardening.
If you have any questions regarding today's show, or if you have any other gardening questions, you can reach us at our website, www.uccemg.com.